Companies are more dependent than ever on third-party providers, and that means they need continuous visibility and monitoring of their external partners' threat landscape. If that sounds like your company, you want to join Looking Glass product manager Brandon Dobrik and Security Ledger editor-in-chief Paul Roberts, that's me, on March 20th at 2 p.m. for a webinar on developing round-the-clock third-party advantage. Brandon and I will discuss what you need to assess vendors in the modern cyber environment and provide an introduction to Looking Glass's cyber situational awareness platform, which provides you with a map of your cyber risks so that you can identify vulnerabilities before your adversary does. To learn more, point your browser to securityledger.com/third-party. That's one word, securityledger.com/third-party. Hello, this is the Security Ledger Podcast, and I'm Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief of the Security Ledger. In this week's episode of the podcast number 135, we continue our series on the future of passwords as we're joined by Gumi Kim, a group product manager at Google who is in charge of that company's account security initiatives. Google, as you know, is one of the internet's largest identity providers with billions of users spread across the globe, consuming products like YouTube, Gmail, and Google's G Suite productivity applications. In this conversation, Gumi and I talk about the scourge of spear phishing and targeted account takeovers and what trends Google is seeing as hackers look to circumvent account protections and gain control over user identities and data. We also talk about Google's Advanced Account Protection Program, which offers high-risk users like politicians, human rights workers, celebrities, and journalists extra protections for their account. And with fewer than 10% of Google users taking advantage of multi-factor authentication, I ask Gumi whether we'll ever see the end of the password, and if so, what a future without passwords might look like. Gumi's been a Google employee for 13 years, and so I asked her how Google's thinking about account security has evolved during that time.
I'm Gumi Kim. I am a group product manager at Google who leads our overall account security initiatives. I would say that Google has always cared about users' privacy and security, but I would say that things have definitely evolved over time where sometimes the innocence that we started off with has been cracked. And this is not just for Google, but maybe for the entire industry. As you see more and more kind of high profile security breaches, you see nation state actors and lots of other kind of sophisticated techniques come up. I think everyone may recall that, you know, back in the 2000s, it was always about like the Nigerian prince and pretty obvious phishing emails. That's not really the case today. I think what you see is over the last, 10 years or so, you've definitely seen an increase in the sophistication of the phishing attacks that are happening. And especially over the last few years, you see a rise in spear phishing. And so with spear phishing in these very targeted campaigns, often, you don't see the obvious typos. You often see personal details of the person who's being attacked to make things more legitimate. You see much more care and attention. For example, if they're spoofing a company like Google or somebody else, they do look at making their emails very credible, pixel perfect, very polished. And oftentimes the human eye cannot actually detect anything that's wrong with the email. And I think this is where advanced technologies like from Google and other companies come in, which is like the machines can often look at things better than humans can.
Obviously, you have billions of users that you're securing. That gives you a pretty amazing vantage point on evolving attacks, including spear phishing, account takeover. What are some of the trends that you're seeing there at Google in how the bad guys are trying to get access to accounts?
Right. We've definitely seen an evolution of kind of upward sophistication. I think where things started was with kind of like the rise of more spear phishing. It kind of started off with people were trying to impersonate brands. And so, for example, you may get something that looks like a security alert from Google or something from eBay or something from your bank, et cetera. I mean, it may be labeled Citibank or whatever. And And the whole point is a lot of these spear phishers, they are using your personal information. So these look very legitimate, but they're also trying to use like the sense of urgency that a security notification or a banking notification can evoke in the victim. And so then our systems over time have gotten more sophisticated where we're like, okay, now we're going to detect logos. And as soon as we do that, they will move on to other techniques. And so we've seen this evolution of like, they started off just trying to impersonate Google. Then, they would try to exactly copy like pixel by pixel some of our security templates. And so just by the human eye, they actually look exactly pixel perfect according to what we're sending. But of course, our systems can tell that we know what our security notifications look like. We can preload those templates in the system. And then it can tell that when it sees those templates and it's not coming from a legitimate google.com email address, then it knows that that's a phishing. So we did that, and then they'll move on to other techniques like, okay, well, I'm not going to exactly copy your template, but I'll make it look plausible. So humans still think it looks plausible, but maybe I'll trick the Google machines into thinking it's something totally different. And this is where things like Earth Mover Distance algorithms come in, and we certainly are able to catch that as well. We're also able to look at things like people will do mixed glyphs, and so we look for homoglyph detection. Mm-hmm. And so people will use like a word, but they'll use like a character like from a different alphabet. And to the human eye, it looks the same. Like let's say the Latin letter E, but in like Cyrillic, that might be the IE letter. And so like to the machine, it's trying to trick the machine and to say like, oh, maybe if I use these different words that would be flagged by the Google systems, then by using different characters, I can trick the systems. But then the human would still think that that's spelled correctly and looks the same. We're able to detect that. We're also, there's also techniques we've seen where spear phishers will try to put in hidden text, either because they're invisible color or they are a zero font. Mm-hmm. And again, this is where the human eye, all of these hidden text makes a word look totally normal and legitimate. Let's say like the word invoice, but to the Google systems that are reading it, they'll first see they won't see the word invoice because there's all these mixed letters inside of it. So it just looks like a jarble. And so they're hoping it won't flag our systems. But of course, like, you know, we have techniques to be able to see that as well. So there are lots of things and it becomes this game of like, what are they going to do? And then we're going to prevent it. And then they try to move on to other techniques. And so we're constantly evolving. And this is an area that, of course, like it's never over because the techniques are very clever and we're going to constantly kind of be on the ball here.
Is it mostly a matter of catching stuff in the net and then seeing the trends emerge? Or do you actually have folks on your team who are trying to sort of, it's like the catch me if you can story, you know, trying to think like the bad guys and get ahead of the curve?
It's definitely a combination of both. So absolutely, we have to respond to the emerging trends that are happening in active attacks. But at the same time, of course, we have to think ahead of the curve and think strategically for the future. Otherwise, we're always going to be playing catch up. And I think that, you know, one example of that, for example, is kind of the OAuth space. Like we knew a few years ago that this could be like the next vector of attack for a lot of folks. And, you know, lo and behold, like look what happened last year with Cambridge Analytica. I think like people now are very aware that this is something that people do need to worry about. And fortunately, it's something that we've already started investing in.
Sure. I must say, and I was in on the beta of Gmail back in whatever it was, 2003 or four. So I've seen the evolution of the account settings and privacy. I really love the My Account feature that you introduced and just kind of the way you made that interface very accessible and user-friendly. And I guess you're leading people into, I guess, making smart decisions is one way to put it. But if you could talk about, as you and your team approached that problem of how do we make account security simpler and more comprehensible for our users, what were the big challenges and also big organizing ideas that you and your team had for that?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that I always try to point the people toward is even before you look at how do you improve the tools themselves, awareness is actually very, very important. There was a Pew study that came out maybe about 4 or 5 years ago that talked about how, you know, 90% of, you know, user ease or user trust actually comes from the awareness that tools are available to them. And yet, I think that there are very few companies in the entire industry who was really investing in how do we make sure that users really know like what's available to them and how they can actually go and take control. And so even as we were looking at, hey, let's really build an awesome My Account product, at the same time, we were also looking at how can we leverage our most prominent surfaces across Google to really make sure that My Account is front and center to all users. I mean, the fact of the matter is we know that most users, they don't want to think about privacy and security on a day-to-day basis. They want to look at YouTube. They want to look at their Gmail. They want to do things for all of the daily product things that Google brings. But we do believe that they do need to know at the same time that if something does happen, if a concern happens, or if they're curious, or if they need questions answered, where do they need to go to actually get that? And so this is actually why you see links to My Account as it's the most prominent place in your identity chip across all the Google products. It's why it's the first product that's available in the app chooser. This is why it's integrated into all of our iOS apps and Android apps in a way that's actually more intuitive to find than it was before. We actually and also did a ton of promotions on our homepage. And so that is actually half the battle, is like just making sure that users are aware. The second half of that, of course, is like the product itself. And like I said, we do recognize that a user's main goal is often not to do privacy and security. But I think especially with security things, when something bad does happen, you do have to make sure that you have tools available to users that don't just solve the problem, but also make them feel at ease. I think one of the biggest examples of this is when a user is hijacked. Previously, you know, users just didn't know what to do. And we really wanted to make sure that in this most distressful moment of probably the most terrible thing that can happen in your online experience, you know, what can we do to really handhold the user through that experience and give them actual canonical advice and information and really handhold them through that. So last October, we actually launched a post-hijacking mitigation flow that would take you through all the steps of not just securing your account, but also undoing some of the damage that the hijacker was doing, and then also setting you in a good position to help prevent that in the future. And I think like this new way of thinking in terms of like, let's go out there, let's be the friend, was a culture change, you know, at Google. And it's certainly something that I haven't yet seen across the industry as well. Most of security approaches have been like, hey, I'm just going to give some information to users. Like, hey, if you do A, here are the consequences. If you do B, here are the consequences. What do you want to do? That's not what users want. They want somebody to tell them, like, what should I be doing? What do you actually recommend? And so we're trying to be much more opinionated in our products to actually help users make those choices.
If you enjoyed this podcast, consider signing up to receive it in your email. Just point your web browser to securityledger.com/subscribe to sign up and get notified whenever a new Security Ledger podcast is posted. Let's talk about the Advanced Protection Program. So this is something that you guys introduced, I believe, was it 2016 or 2017?
It was October 2017.
This initially, and I'm not sure what the scope of the program is now, but initially it was sort of for journalists and NGO workers or human rights workers or high profile business people, celebrities and so on, who might be the target of sophisticated hackers, nation state actors, and so on. Talk a little bit about how that program came about and who it's available to now.
One of the things that I had mentioned before was kind of how phishing and spear phishing has evolved over time. I think definitely over the last 2 to 3 years, we've definitely seen a marked increase in spear phishing and especially sophisticated spear phishing techniques. But one of the things that we recognize is at Google, we handle issues for billions and billions of users. And oftentimes these techniques that are being used for the mass actually aren't appropriate for when things happen to a very small set of users or even an individual user. And so we recognize that like, hey, if this is the new wave of where these attackers are going, we need to actually invest to make sure that we have the right tools in place to actually catch and prevent these things from happening. This was just kind of the philosophy then of how Advanced Protection came out, which is we wanted to make sure we have different types of opinionated protections and advice for different types of users. And for this, the type of user tend to be high-risk users. High-risk users are not everyday people. You know, these are people who are going to actually be the target of these very specific individualized attacks and often by very, very sophisticated adversaries. And so with Advanced Protection, there's really kind of two advantages of being in this program. One is it is holistic. What that means is oftentimes you see security advice and security actions really only focusing on authentication, which is the login portion. So they'll tell you, oh, sign up for 2SV and make sure you don't reuse passwords and make sure you don't do X and Y. That only focuses on one way of being attacked. But the truth is especially for high-risk individuals, these attackers are going to try to find any means into your account that they can. And so they can look at things like, hey, how do I get OAuth access? How do I come in through account recovery? How do I come in through malware? How do I come in through all of these different things? And so advanced protection actually tries to look at what are the different types of attack vectors that can happen, and then let's put in protections against that. So we initially launched with a set of the most common ways that these people were getting hijacked. But then the second advantage of the program is that it's continually evolving. It is a program, which means once you're in, we will constantly monitor for that next wave of attack vectors and vulnerabilities. And we will automatically put in kind of new features and new protections to protect you. You don't have to take any additional action to take advantage of those developments.
So one interesting thing about it is you went with the hard token as a hard second factor, as opposed to, right, I think what most people would think of as just the text message code. You're getting an SMS with the one-time password in it. Talk about that. And was the concern that Google had about these sort of, you know, very sophisticated attacks, or just a feeling maybe that a USB key might be just more simple and usable for more people?
Yeah, this was definitely a security decision. In general, you know, 2FA has lots of different factors, and, you know, SMS is probably the most popular, but there's other things like, you know, Google Authenticator codes, there's Google Prompts, and lots of other options. I think that, you know, probably you and your audience are aware that attacks on SMS codes have been increasing over time. So, for example, you can do social recovery or tricks to, if you call Verizon or any other operator, you know, people have gotten in that way, and they've gotten control of your SMS phone number. They can also be phished. There's been an increase of man-in-the-middle attacks, and even for users who do 2FA, like, they're able to actually phish these soft codes. And especially with the advent of open source toolkits and other things that are available, this has become more widespread. I would say for an everyday user, that's not a big concern. Like, 2FA will probably give them adequate protection. But we're really talking about high-risk individuals who are being targeted by people who are motivated to attack specifically them. And so you really want to be using a hard factor, like a security key, which does give you the best protection against phishing. So that is something where, because, like, there's the cryptographic connection, you actually can't phish the security key the way that you can with an SMS code or something else that's knowledge-based. That being said, we do recognize, you know, there is a usability trade-off. There are things that we're working on to actually improve the chance of lockout and other friction that could happen because of use of security key. One thing that we've already done, for example, is we don't require you to use the security key every time you log in. In fact, once you've kind of bootstrapped, let's say, your computer or your mobile phone that you use all the time, you're almost never asked for the security key again, because that doesn't actually increase your security to constantly ask for it on a known and trusted device.
One of the conundrums you face is the more users using advanced security, you know, multi-factor or what have you, the more opportunities for mishaps, the lost token, the lost phone, people locked out of their accounts. How has Google found to manage that trade-off, which is, as we increase security, we're also increasing the chances for something to go wrong here and for us to be in a position of needing to get this person access to their account or figure out whether this is a legitimate person requesting access to their account?
Right, absolutely. It's definitely a concern, because it's always a fine trade-off, and we have to kind of counterbalance, you know, security measures with access to accounts. With the advanced protection program specifically, the way that we counter that is we actually require that you have two security keys registered. And so the idea is if you lose one, then the other is in a safe place where you can still go and access that being said, because you have bootstrapped some of your devices, like, there are ways that we can help to kind of verify whether it's you and continue to give access. And I would say that that's probably the hardest problem, is especially with advanced protection. We did think through, you know, how do we actually mitigate the concern? Now, but the fact of the matter is if you lose both your security keys, we do not let you back into the account. And that's kind of by design, because we want to make sure that your account is protected enough that a hijacker wouldn't be able to kind of social engineer or otherwise break into your account.
Kim, how many users do you have for the advanced protection program right now?
I can't share that number, unfortunately.
Can you ballpark it?
What I can tell you is, like I said, the program is not for your everyday user. It's really for the highest risk individuals. One of the things that we like to look at is, well, who are the high-risk individuals globally? And we actually think that the number is in the low single-digit millions mm-hmm. of people who should even be in this program. And so that gives you an idea of the type of scale of who we consider high-risk versus the rest of the population. So you're looking at single-digit millions versus our billions and billions of users.
All of the Kardashians are in that group, I'm guessing.
I suppose.
Can anyone sign up for it? So I'm a journalist. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm potentially high risk. Can I sign up for this program? And if I sign up, will I get into it?
Yes, definitely. While we do think that there is a certain definition of high risk individuals who this program is tailored for, we don't prevent anyone from signing in if they want to. And it's a free program. All you have to do is buy security keys. And it can be any FIDO compliant security key. It doesn't have to be like Facian or YubiKey. There's also the Google key and other things available. And so all you do is purchase those and then basically the program is there for you.
And we'll post a link on how to do that. So anyone can really sign up for it. And I guess in some ways it's sort of a self-selecting population, right? If they're concerned enough about security to know about the Advanced Protection Program, then maybe they're a good candidate for it.
They are. But I think the other thing, though, to keep in mind is people tend to underestimate risk. In developing this product, we've actually talked to a lot of different segments of high-risk users. And one of the things that we found was, for example, let's say a political campaign committee. They actually feel like, oh, I don't even need to protect my Gmail account. I don't really use it. And then we would ask questions like, hey, what's protecting your Facebook account and your Twitter account, Amazon, and all these, your bank account, all these other things? They're like, oh, my Gmail
account.
Yeah. And like people don't. And so I would say, like, I really appreciate the fact that you and, you know, other journalists are kind of getting the word out there, is because, like, people do underestimate that risk. And in general, we actually see that most people think that they're low risk. They also think they're too smart to be phished. It's like 61% of people don't even think that they'll be phished. And yet, I have so many examples of these spear phishing techniques where the human eye cannot detect why it is a suspicious email.
Sure. Sure.
And so I really want everyone to just kind of understand that even if you think that you're at risk, just take some action about that.
And we all get so many emails and other stimulus during the day, right? It's mm-hmm. easy to have a mental lapse, right? With all those requests for your attention, yeah. It's easy to make a bad call on any given email.
Yeah. And Paul, I think you're exactly right. And that's exactly the point. And that's actually why at Google, one of the things that I'm really trying to push on is, let's make sure we do as many automatic things proactively for the user as possible. Because like you said, you know, users are busy in their everyday life. We don't scrutinize for security issues. That's actually Google's job. And so for example, in email, we have these huge honking, you know, UI banners in safe browsing when you're doing the web, again, like these big warnings. We will also proactively do things like recommend that you remove apps from your account. We actually are pretty accurate, like 99.9% of spam and phishing emails never even see your inbox. And so there's all of these things that we'll do automatically. And even if you're not signed into 2FA, for example, we do still do risk-based challenges at login and other techniques. And so my strong belief is, like, we as Google need to do as many things automatically as possible because, one, users don't have the expertise to actually find all these security vulnerabilities, but also two, some of them just aren't visible to the human eye. And again, this is where our machine learning, our algorithms and our models really come in.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big challenges, obviously, for you guys is that you don't control this whole ecosystem. So there are third-party applications. They themselves can get access to sensitive data or be the avenue for some kind of compromise or attack. I know as part of the Advanced Protection Program, you really limit the apps to Google Apps and a small number of trusted partners. In the long term, though, there's always going to be this trade-off. Your users are going to want more apps and more capabilities, but you can't vouch for the security of those. So how do you win that war, as it were?
And I think we actually already kind of even went through the first phase of that, which is originally when we launched in October 2017, we actually did not have support for some of the native Apple apps. I think it was like Calendar and Mail and other things. And then, you know, since then we had a kind of update release in May where we actually did figure out a way on how users could use legitimate native Apple apps, because there was a huge segment of our users who actually were using those applications. And so we're constantly on the lookout to try to find how can we be more flexible with some of our policies, but do it in a way that's secure. And so for those iOS users, we certainly found that. Another example is one of the things we heard a lot about is, you know, activists really like using Thunderbird. And in the beginning, we didn't have Thunderbird or Firefox support. And that is also something that we added later in the year. Mm-hmm. After the initial release. And so we do want to hear back from the users on kind of what's working for them, what's not, because we do want to evolve on both the usability as well as the security fronts.
So, I mean, Google is one of the three, one of the main identity providers really on the internet. You know, I look at Google, mm-hmm. Microsoft, Facebook, obviously, you know, there are a couple others. Is that a good thing? In other words, do you see going forward, do you see maybe identity coalescing around a few very large providers like yourself, Microsoft, Facebook, as purveyors of identity, or the opposite, given the privacy concerns and so on, that we're going to end up in this much more balkanized identity landscape with lots of different identity providers and maybe lower security as a result?
Yeah. So I think focusing on the security aspect, I think it is a good thing when some of the bigger trusted players actually are identity providers. The fact of the matter is authentication is hard, and you want innovation to happen. But oftentimes what happens with some of these smaller websites or websites whose business is not in security and authentication, there's lots of gotchas in terms of like, how do you stop hijackers? How do you still provide availability? How do you think about all of these different risks and issues that can happen along the way? And there are actually people who are experts in this at some of these companies who are focusing on identity. So you make sure you're getting kind of the best of that world. At least from a Google perspective, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of is the fact that when you do use like Google Sign-In, you are getting like Google Class authentication, even if you're mm-hmm. using, let's say, a very small website or a website that's focused on a totally different industry like finance or something else, right? It's actually very important that we provide kind of the best of what we can through sharing that technology with other services.
Back in the 90s, right, we all talked about sort of the digital divide, right, and the gap between, you know, wealthy, educated consumers and less wealthy, educated consumers around technology use. It strikes me, obviously, that security is just another manifestation of that, and that for the billions of users of Google, some of these, you know, security features, that some of this may just beyond the ability to really grasp and understand how important online security and identity are to their economic health and so on. How do you get the message out? And I guess not only change behavior for the millions of, you know, really high value users, but for the billions of just ordinary users. Is that something you can do merely using your platform? Or is it really something where you need to, you know, work with governments almost at like sort of the public health level to educate people about these things?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. First, on the product side, we absolutely do try to bring security to the masses. And like I said, the approach is also around how do we be automatic and proactive and bring the issues to the user rather than having them kind of discern it for themselves. One salient example is, if you look at the first version of the security advisor, you know, it was great that it took you through all of the main security gotchas, but the approach of it would be like, hey, look at this list of devices. Does anything look wrong to you? And then it would say, hey, look at this list of apps. Does anything look wrong to you? Mm-hmm. And while we actually got good feedback from users, the truth of the matter is like users are in no position to actually tell us what's wrong because what they don't know, they don't know. And so when we created the second version of Security Advisor, which we launched last year, the approach was about don't ask the user what's wrong. Tell them what's wrong and then tell them a recommendation on what they can do to fix mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And this is where we had an emphasis on is the overall state of your account. Is it in a green, yellow, or red state? And then what are the specific items that are contributing to like the red or the yellow state? And what should you actually do about it? And so this is where for the first time we were like, hey, this device that's connected to your account, you haven't used it in a long time, you really should remove it. Or like, hey, this app looks risky to us, you really should remove right. it. We've never before like gone out on a limb and actually said those things, but that's actually what users need to hear. And so we have that in our tool. But like I said, awareness is, you know, 90% of the problem. And so we actually also made sure that now we actually send out billions of emails per quarter to our users that if they have an open issue that's keeping the account state in a yellow or red, we make sure to actually go and email them to be like, hey, you actually need to go and take action on this. And so we are trying to start off this like account health campaign from the product point of view. But the second part of that, obviously, is I think it's broader than just what we can do at Google and through our products. I think there's a whole thing that the industry can help with, as well as people on the outside of the industry as well. You mentioned governments, but I also think like, you know, journalists such as yourself play a big part in like, hey, let's bring the story out. Let's educate people to a higher level. Sure. On that last point, one of the things that I see is, you know, maybe like 3 to 5 years ago, nobody really understood 2FA and they didn't know what SMS with 2FA meant. But now everybody gets it. Every bank and lots of different services are constantly sending you second factors through SMS. And so when you talk about it now, people are like, oh yeah, I get it. And it's easier for them to interact or respond when they need to. In the same vein, I want to raise that level of comfort and education on now the newer security technologies. Right now, I would say that new wave is security keys. The name of it is terrible. Nobody understands what it means intuitively. But imagine 5 years from now, if everybody, not even five, let's say 2 years from now, if everybody understood it, like we could get to a whole new level of baseline security for everybody. And that is something that's really exciting to me. And I hope like lots of different players will help participate in kind of pushing up that level of education and participation.
You've been involved with this as a product manager at Google around these account security issues, including the Advanced Protection Program. Are there metrics or measurements that indicate whether this is working? So as Google looks to evaluate your own success in securing users' accounts from takeover, compromise, and so on, what measures do you have and what indications do you have that it's working or not?
The answer is very nuanced. I think for folks who work in this space, we all know that ground truth data is actually the hardest. If we had perfect ground truth data on how many hijackings actually were happening a day, then we wouldn't have a hijacking issue to begin with, right? So some of the measures of kind of how we look at the space is we're like, well, for the hijackings that we know about, like how many of them are actually happening a day? We also look at, well, what is our ability to detect hijackings proactively compared to the reported list of hijackings that we get. So we'll make sure that compared to a golden set, we actually have sufficient coverage and we're trying to increase that coverage over time. Those are just kind of raw numbers. There's other aspects that are important. Like for example, I think the way that users feel is very important. And this is where, you know, me coming from a product management background, I'm really trying to push like, it's not just important to protect users. It's also important to help them feel reassured and confident about the fix that happened, as well as their future prospects. I think that that was something that we hadn't looked at previously in the industry as much, but I think it's super important. People are concerned. They're concerned about not just Google, but the cloud in general. And there's so much value to be had, but we want to make sure that users are actually feeling comfortable with what's there. And so we do put in a lot of effort and do measurement in how are users feeling in reaction to the reassurances and the information and the steps and other things that we're doing through our products.
Do you know what percentage of users are using some second factor?
Yeah, it's less than 10%. And so it is very small. That being said, that is the number of users who are explicitly signed, opted into the 2FA product. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't actually believe that the way to have impact is by telling users to do something. And so this is where we've really emphasized at Google to do more automatic protections. And so we do actually have risk-based models that will present you with second factor challenges.
Sure.
When the situation arises. And so with that, we're actually able to protect, you know, the majority of our users through that method versus the much smaller percentage who's actually opted into 2FA.
So 100% of users are benefiting from supplemental protections, some of them automated. But in terms of users who have taken on that responsibility of that second factor, that's a little less than 10%. Part of the series is about life after the password. Do you, given that for, you know, 90-something percent of your users, it still is username and password to get into their account, do you imagine a time in the future where we actually can get rid of the password? And if so, how are we authenticating without a password?
I think even if we move beyond the password, there's still going to be like whatever that next thing is, people are going to try to fish it. So this is where, again, like even if you're on 2FA, people are going to try to fish
it. I didn't ask if we were getting beyond the phishing attack because the answer is obviously no.
I think a lot of that is already starting to come about. And it's a lot of it is about convenience. So for example, you know, biometrics has been really popular. And so services that offer, you know, fingerprint as authentication, that's definitely something that's resonated with a lot of users. So we definitely see that wave. And I think as we see that evolution, the thing we just have to keep in mind is what are the new attack vectors that are going to come about because of the new ways that people are authenticating. And so you can even imagine, like, biometrics sounds super secure, but trust me, these phishers and hijackers, they are very creative. They're going to find ways to try to get that as well. And so we always have to stay ahead of that curve and think about how do we proactively put these under some kind of protection.
You know, voice-based interactions, voice-based commands are really catching on with Google Home and Amazon Echo and so on. Voice authentication, not quite as far along. So how do we, as we look to expand the accessibility of computers via voice-based interaction, how does that not become a wide-open backdoor for attackers, given that generally we're not very good right now at authenticating users based on their voice?
Yeah. So right now, the way we get around that, obviously, is you actually authenticate on like an app that's connected to your Google Home first. Right. But I think as these new factors kind of come online, we actually have to rethink the authentication model. So I think right now we all assume it's going to be like, hey, what's your user's name? And then what's your authentication method? Is it your fingerprint, your voice, your password, whatever? That may not be the exact model that we rely on. And so technologies right now, you know, detecting or verifying that the voice belongs to the person definitely needs some more development. And it can obviously be spoofed with recordings and other things. But you don't actually have to rely on the voice as a single factor. You know, maybe there's a combination of different things that can contribute to whether we can authenticate a person or not. And maybe voice is a participant, but maybe not the only thing. But I think like the point is we should look at the entire spectrum of kind of what's possible and not just assume that voice just replaces password.
Okay, final question. Even the most techie and security savvy engineer like yourself has parents. Have you been successful at convincing your parents to adopt strong second factor authentication for their accounts?
You know, I haven't even tried to tell them to do it. but this again goes to my whole philosophy is, security has the most impact when it is practical. And this is where I really believe in the efficacy of our dynamic challenges. And so I do recommend everyone to just give a security phone number, because if events happen, it gives us a way to actually interact with you, tell you what's happening. It can be a way to unlock your account, etc. That doesn't mean you actually have to be in 2FA. And so philosophically, I don't actually think my parents should be in 2FA.
That's really interesting. So should we all just wait for our parents to come to us and say, I'm concerned about security, show me what to do, rather than trying to force this better technology down their throat?
No, what we should all do is tell everyone to take the security checkup, because it's right. It's looking at individual factors in your account, and on an individualized basis, it can tell you like, hey, you don't have a phone number, give me a phone number. Hey, like, this is your device situation, this is your app situation, these are other things. And so that I think is the thing, if anything, like that's all point.
That's even easier. Just outsource it to the Google account checkup.
Yeah. So just go to g.co/security checkup.
Gumi, thank you so much for coming on the Security Ledger podcast. It was really great having you on.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
Gumi Kim is Group Product Manager at Google. She was here talking to us about Google's account security initiatives.